On the 18th of October, Halloween gave to me 18 Franks perving, 17 angels stripping, 16 demons jazzercising, 15 runes on parchment, 14 Josephs whispering, 13 seniors bleeding, 12 creepy masks, 11 dancing demons, 10 Catholic monsters, 9 priests a-miracling, 8 Jerry's vamping, 7 Jody's oinking, 6 body swapping, 5 Reeds a-wolfing, 4 drunken uncles, 3 werewolf colonies, 2 spooky sisters, and a psycho who killed Janet Lee. Well, hey there, everyone. Welcome to Monday, October 18th. This is, of course, another entry in our 31 days of Halloween celebration. And we have been on a sort of mini marathon of demonic films. And so now we land on maybe the most famous of everything we're going to talk about. And that, of course, is Clive Barker's Hellraiser. As you may or may not know, Hellraiser is based on Clive Barker's own story, The Hellbound Heart, and he directed this after being a bit disappointed with the way that his work was being adapted, so he threw himself into the director's chair for this one, and by his own admission, he was not an expert filmmaker by any stretch. He probably should have had someone helping him along, but Barker said that, you know, the cast and crew was terrific and really encouraged him and so forth. So this was the result. And Hellraiser is in many ways the movie that I loathe and love all at once. I love it for a number of reasons we'll talk about here in a second. And I loathe it because it spawned a number of sequels that are pretty terrible. The first one, you know, we'll get into that another time, perhaps on another 31 days of Halloween, but Hellbound, Hellraiser 2, totally fine sequel, pretty good movie. I enjoy that one quite a bit, although it's been a while since I've seen it. Hellraiser is an interesting movie because, unlike the films that come after, it was clear that the Cenobites were not necessarily an afterthought, but the Cenobites were, you know, the shark from Jaws. You heard some about them, and when they showed up, shit went down. But they weren't the focus of the film, unlike Hellraiser 2. Again, my memory is a bit sketchy when it comes to this, so perhaps I'm misremembering, but that seems very Cenobite-oriented. Certainly Hellraiser 3, the last third of that movie, is just a bunch of Cenobites and Pinhead running around wreaking havoc and that kind of thing. And then the later sequels, of course, were movies that were written for, you know, on their own spec scripts, that kind of thing, and then people just jammed some Cenobites in them and called that a Hellraiser movie. So that's why when I'm watching Hellraiser, I have to remember that's not how all this started. That Hellraiser itself is much more a movie about Claire and the dynamics of this marriage and you know, the forbidden fruit sort of thing. And so when Hellraiser kicks off and you get, you know, the bit with Frank, Uncle Frank, who finds the lament configuration. I don't think it's ever given name in this movie, although I could be wrong about that. I don't recall them ever saying anything besides calling it a puzzle box. And by the way, I just realized I called Claire Higgins by her actress's name, as opposed to her character's name, Julia. But yeah, so it becomes clear she and her husband, Larry, are moving into this house that was used as a flop house by Uncle Frank at one time. You know, Larry is a decent enough guy, seems pretty milquetoast, a very down-the-middle, kind of middle management sort of guy. And Julia is a bit more exotic and certainly has tastes that run more closely aligned with Frank's, who is a hedonist, a guy who's constantly in search of new pleasures. And as I was referencing at the beginning of the movie, they you know, he finds some dude in, you know, a side shop in some bar in some Middle Eastern country. And this is a joke that Duncan has all the time. What is your pleasure, sir? And that's what Frank is looking for. He's looking for new unknown pleasures. And of course, opens up the puzzle box. And, you know, you opened the box, we came. And so Frank is torn apart at the beginning of the movie. And so the movie isn't really about the Cenobites. The movie is really about, you know, some blood accidentally getting killed on the floor of the room where Frank met his end at the hands of the Cenobites. And when that blood is spilled, he is able to reconstitute to some degree. And so that's really where the focus of the movie lies, is Frank convincing Julia to help him become human again, and also to do it on the quick because he has somehow escaped the grasp of the Cenobites, and if they don't beat feet pretty soon, the Cenobites are going to catch up to him. That's the last thing in the world that Frank wants to happen. And so Julia ends up having to seduce and murder men. And so a lot of the movie is, and thematically, is about, like, how far are you willing to go to satisfy your dark desires? You know, what are you capable of in the name of pleasure? And Julia clearly is capable of more than she ever expected. She murders several men, although she has this sort of, you know, attraction repulsion thing where she is willing to do this to get Frank back, and this memory of this illicit affair that they had, this really torrid affair that she had, cuckolding her husband, Larry. But she also doesn't want to face the consequences of what she's doing. Like, she'll knock a guy in the head with a hammer, but she doesn't want to be there when, you know, Frank jams his hand into them and sucks the blood and life force out of them and whatnot. And against the backdrop of all this is Kirsty, as played by Ashley Lawrence. This was an introducing Ashley Lawrence kind of film. And she is, kind of typical college student, and is very much, loves her father, is a very traditional kind of person. And, she runs afoul of Uncle Frank and Julia and gets hold of the box and opens it. And when the Cenobites come for her, what is the name? The architect, I think? The engineer, something like that, is the name of the monster she sees in the hallway. It's never given name in the movie, but that was the hellbound hard thing. And anyway, Kirsty makes a deal with the Cenobites that, like, hey, how about you don't take me, and I will lead you to Frank, who escaped you. And the Cenobites sort of agree to that, but, you know, Cenobites, you can't trust them for nothing. So when she finally does run home and finds that her father, Larry, has been killed by Julia and Frank, and is now, Frank is now wearing Larry's skin, she ends up, leading the Cenobites to Frank, and he ends up getting ripped apart in that Jesus wept moment. And then Kirsty, of course, has to use the box to sort of banish the Cenobites with swirling little semen wiggles that happen in the movie when she closes the box. And yeah, it's interesting to look at the story as a whole now. And it's a very small story at the end of the day, much smaller than I think the films after this go, especially when you get to, you know, 3 and 4, where it's like, oh, we are going to bring hell on earth and also let's go to space. You know, it's a relatively small budget and a small scale story. The stakes are reasonably low, where, you know, a couple of these people could die and go to hell and that ain't nothing, but it's not the apocalypse. And so when I rewatched it this time, aside from the small scale of it striking me, the other things that really struck me about it was that I like the fact that the Cenobites really aren't in it that much. You know, they show up to be this ominous force of hell, and the less you know, the better. This is sort of the Blair Witch effect. I was recently on Cut to the Chase with Dan and Lacey, and we talked about that movie and the, you know, don't show the audience any more than you have to scare them. And I think Hellraiser does a pretty good job of establishing what the Cenobites are. Their look is amazing, considering when this movie came out, like, nobody had ever heard of a Pinhead or a Cenobite, and they're just these, like, fetish demons that when you saw them on screen, or when I did when I was a kid, I was like, this makes me feel all kinds of weird things, but I like it. And that's the appeal of the Cenobites, is that they promise all this untold pleasure, but, you know, it's gonna hurt like hell, too. And, you know, they call themselves, like, explorers of forbidden pleasures and whatnot. And, you know, even Frank says, like, at a certain point, you can no longer tell the difference between pleasure and pain. And that is somewhat horrifying, but also kind of sexy in its own weird way. So it's an interesting allure, and the fact that the movie doesn't concentrate on them is to its benefit. Because the more you imagine about what it is that the Cenobites are going to do once they drag you into their, you know, chain spinning pillar hellscape, that's way better than anything that they could show you, because everybody's sense of what hurts and what feels good is a little bit different. Like, all of that is a weird kind of spectrum. And so for everyone watching this movie, they can have their personal hell sort of unfold in their mind. And that's a little bit of genius. I don't ever find the character of Julia very compelling in this movie, though, to get around to the stuff that perhaps I don't like as much. I wish that I had more time with Frank. I wish I knew the other shit he had done other than the Polaroids that Julia kind of flips through, where he's just having a bunch of sex and, you know, maybe spanking people or whatever. But I feel like I would like to know how far down the rabbit hole he went. And I suppose it's just because I like that kind of story. I would like to see him on the hunt for the box. Like, that's almost the movie I wish I could see. And I know they're making a remake of this, or a reimagining, or a reboot, or whatever. And I wouldn't be angry if a lot of the movie was that. If we got a little deeper into the character of Frank. Because in this, Frank is just a monster. You know, come to daddy. Which is creepy, but also I just want it to be... like, that exploration, that transgressive search for these forbidden pleasures, that's the kind of thing I wish I could see. And you don't have to define it completely, but show me the depravity that is too tame for him at this point that leads him to the search for the box. And as I said, I just don't think Julia is that captivating a character in this. I like Larry as a character a lot more, and not because he's just the good guy, but because there seems to be more there. I mean, I wish I knew why Julia had this resentment towards her husband. Is that just who she is? It's hard to say. And I think that Hellraiser doesn't do necessarily a great job of defining her character in a way that you can argue that her actions are understandable because she is obsessed with Frank and this affair that they had, but that's kind of it. You don't really know much more about her. You know, why is she with Larry in the first place? What was the thing that, you know, how did they end up together? Was it just that she was, you know, washed up on the shores of some terrible relationship and Larry was there to help her, or what? Like, it's obvious that Larry loves her, but he's the kind of guy that's content to sort of sit around the house and watch TV, and that doesn't seem to be Julia at all. So yeah, it's a really interesting sort of lack of explanation as to what that relationship is. And I do like the fact that Kirsty does not seem to care for Julia much at all. That makes me happy. And then there's the boyfriend question mark that Kirsty runs into periodically and is there for the end of the movie, but I kind of couldn't care less about him. He's such a non-character. The movie would just be better off if he were not even in it, because he doesn't matter. But then, you know, we get the great ending where this homeless dude that she saw earlier eating crickets out of an aquarium, you know, takes the box back and turns into some bony demon and flies away with it. And then we see at the very end, you know, we're back where we started with the guy giving away the lament configuration and saying, "What is your pleasure?" I also like when he says to Frank, Frank hands over some money to buy the box off of him, and he says, "It's yours." And then Frank leaves and he says, "It always was." That's fun. You know, this idea that, hey, the box calls to some people. That's a very Stephen King kind of idea as well, of evil calls to evil, or some people are just doomed to find the thing that they are looking for. So all that being said, what about Hellraiser in general? I mean, it has its flaws, to be sure, but it is also just an iconic film. There just isn't anything quite like it. And that's crazy that we live in a world where Hellraiser still seems so iconic and offbeat and weird. Like, I can't think of another major horror film. And maybe it was just the time it came out that, you know, there are plenty of people doing fetish demons straight to video. I'm not aware of it, but perhaps. It just seems so like an idea whose time had come, no pun intended. And yeah, it's just terrific. That part of it, you know, all the Cenobite stuff, the premise of it is fantastic. Despite how I think the execution maybe isn't always great, and especially at the end of the movie, I think those visual effects look super cheap, and the constant dust falling from the ceiling really had me laughing, because as the house rattles and shakes, the amount of plaster falling on them, it's, you know, it might as well just be snowing in the house. It's just ridiculous. But again, those are really small complaints compared against a movie that has so much going on for it, sort of creatively and thematically. On that level, it is just a supreme accomplishment. And one of those things where, like, hey, I don't necessarily like the lyrics to this song, but the music is just a banger. And that's kind of how Hellraiser is. Like, some of the beats I'm not crazy about, but man, oh man, every time I watch it, I'm like, well, there's a reason this is a classic. And it's strange to think that this is a movie that is now, you know, 40-ish years old, almost 35. So, you know, we've had the Cenobites for more of my life than not, which is crazy. And yeah, Hellraiser is, and also as far as just being a depiction of hell, there is something about the idea that hell is a thing that gives you what you want in a way that corrupts and destroys you. I think that's fantastic. Also, how did Frank escape? That's another thing I wish that I knew more about. I just want the Frank movie. I want the Hellraiser prequel that is all about Frank falling into the clutches of the Cenobites and then escaping the Cenobites, as well as his search for forbidden pleasures. But, you know, what are you going to do, I suppose? All right, that's going to do it for Hellraiser. It's a terrific movie. If you've never seen Hellraiser, what in the hell are you doing? You ought to be watching the Hellraiser at least once every couple of years or so, just to remind yourself how kinky horror can be. But anyway, thanks as always, guys, for joining me here on this 31 Days of Halloween. We are in the home stretch. We are in the back nine, so to speak. But we are not done with demonic films. We've got one more on the docket before we do some one-offs, and then we get into just some random movies before, you know, the big day. What will be the 31st horror film on the 31 Days of Horror? Again, not repeating anything from last year, and I'm trying to do the really great stuff on the back end. So here we go. We are about to hit we're about to hit a stretch of movies that is nothing but gold star films. At any rate, if you're listening to this and you're not subscribed to Legion Podcast, please do. If you're enjoying what you're listening to and you haven't left us a review, please do that as well. That certainly helps us out a lot. And spoilers, this Halloween has been really good. A lot of people have been listening to the stuff we've been doing, and getting the feedback on all of that has been terrific. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting Legion Podcasts. If you want to do it even more directly, you can go to patreon.com/Legion Podcasts, where for a buck or two a month, you can help support lots of shows and get some exclusive stuff and early access to episodes and all kinds of fun stuff. So anyway, enough of all that promoting. I'm taking off my P.T. Barnum hat. It is now time to go about the day. Have a great Monday, everybody. Do good work out there. Stay spooky as long as you can. And come back tomorrow for another 31 Days of Halloween with a brand new movie that is a secret until tomorrow. See you then.